Morning. Today's daf in Shabbos Kuf Mem Dalid. We are on the very bottom of Kuf Mem Gimel Mem Beis. We are starting this morning with the words V'sever of Yehuda. About 8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. We started yesterday the 22nd parak of Masechta Shabbos. A topic under discussion is the topic of Schita, squeezing fruit on Shabbos. One squeezes the fruit on Shabbos. Let's start off with olives and grapes. One were to squeeze either one of those two fruits. So one would be in violation of the malacha of schita, which is not the malacha, it's not the av malacha, it's the talad, it's the subcategory. The malacha is dash. We learned back in the 7th parak of Masechta Shabbos that of the 39 malachos, when one puts pressure on a kernel in order to squeeze the kernel out from its chaff, so that is threshing, and that is the malacha of dash, it's the av malacha of dash. So one takes the fruit and goes ahead and expresses and puts pressure on the fruit in order to get the juice out. So that also is going to be similar in its mechanism as that of the dash, and it's what is described as schita, and it would be a malacha on Shabbos. The Mishnah yesterday introduced us to this idea, and so what we're going to be doing over the course of today's daf is that we're going to be going into some detail over the malacha of schita. We're going to be going off on some tangents here and there, but generally speaking, that's going to be a topic for today. Reviewing what we learned yesterday in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, after the Mishnah went through the case of the barrel and the recouping of the wine from the barrel and the idea that you can't take more than three meals worth of wine from the broken barrel. We discussed that yesterday, very similar to what we learned back in the 16th Perek. When the fire breaks out in the house, you're capped in terms of what you can go ahead and recover from the house. So here also, when the broken barrel, so you're also going to be capped in terms of what you recover from the barrel. But after that first point of the Mishnah turns its attention to Schita. The Mishnah, if I'm just going to reread the Mishnah briefly. So the Mishnah says that one cannot squeeze the fruit in order to extract a liquid from them, but if the liquid comes out on its own, that means to say that the fruit was so juicy or like we discussed yesterday, you started the squeezing process before Shabbos, and juice flows out from it on Shabbos itself. So this is me'elav. This is now juice coming out on its own. So according to the Tanna Kamma, so it's going to be usur. It simply is going to be prohibited. And as Rashi explained back in yesterday's Mishnah, the reason why is because gzera, meaning once you go ahead and enjoy that juice that comes out on its own, so you're going to be very tempted to go ahead and squeeze it. And so therefore, it's a gzera derabbanan. Rav Yehuda makes a distinction in terms of why exactly this fruit was purchased. Rav Yehuda says, "Im la'ochlan hayotam em motar, v'im la'mashkan hayotam em asur." So Rav Yehuda says that it makes a distinction in terms of whether or not the fruit was purchased for eating, or whether or not the fruit was purchased for its juice and juicing. If the fruit was purchased for eating, so then any juice that comes out of it on Shabbos is going to be mutter. And if the fruit is purchased for juicing, so then the fruit that comes out of it is going to be mutter. Sorry. And the fruit that comes out of it is going to be aser. So this machlokus in the Mishnah between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda, so yesterday it was approached at by four different Amorayim. The first approach was Rabbi Yehuda Meshmol, the second approach was Ula, in the name of Rav, so the third approach is Rav Yochanan, and the fourth approach is Rabba in the name of Rav Yehuda Meshmol. So what we're going to be looking at right now is this fourth approach that we saw yesterday, because the Gemara is going to be spending pretty much the entire day today over this fourth approach. The fourth approach basically takes fruit and puts it into three categories. Category number one is Zeisim V'anavim. It's olives and grapes. Olives and grapes, which are principally used in order to express the juice out of them. Olive, of course, is generally speaking used for oil, and grapes, of course, is made into wine. So when it comes to zeisim va'anavim, category number one, so everybody agrees, meaning there's no machlokus between the Tanna Kamma and Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda is totally adaptive to the position of the Tanna Kamma in that it's going to be usur, under all circumstances, meaning that it doesn't matter why exactly you bought the fruit, since typically this fruit is used for juicing, so therefore the juice that comes out of it on Shabbos is going to be usur. Then there is category number two. Category number two, tusim v'rimonim. Tusim in modern Hebrew, strawberries. In the Gemara, it's probably some form of a berry. Rimonim, pomegranates. So here in category number two, so tusim v'rimonim typically sometimes is juiced, sometimes not juiced. It could go either way. But there are people who juice these types of fruits in category number two. That's where there's a machlokus between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda. Tanakhama says that juice comes out of it on Shabbos is going to be aser, and Rav Yehuda says it depends why you purchase the fruit. If you purchased it for eating, so then it's going to be a mutter. If you purchased it for juicing, then it's going to be aser. And then finally, there's category number three. Category number three, sharpeiros. Any other fruit, which typically is not used for juicing. Usually, the fruit is there to be consumed. So then the juice that comes out of it on Shabbos is going to be mutter, according to everybody, both according to Rav Yehuda and according to the Tanakhama. So what we have now in this final presentation of the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda is that we have three levels. Level number one, Zeisim V'Anavim. Level number two, Tzusim V'Rimonim. Level number three, Sharpeiros. And in levels one and three, agreement. And level two, that's where the machlokas is between the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda. And what the Gemara now is going to be doing is exploring this approach of the machlokas between Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda, challenge a little bit, support it a little bit, and so that's what the Gemara is going to be doing for really most of today's daf. And so now we're going to pick it up where we left off yesterday. Now, to appreciate what the Gemara is headed to right now, so let's go back and let's learn the braisa that we learned at the end of yesterday's daf. The braisa is going to really sound very supportive to this idea that we just learned. And if we could take a look back at the Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, so I'm really backing up just a couple lines, just so we can see the Braisa, because there's one word in the Braisa that the Gemara is going to be focusing on for pretty much half of today's daf. Zeisim shemashach mehem shemen v'anav shemashach meyayim v'echnisim bein la'ocha bein la'mashkim hayotz mehem asur. So here in the Braisa, we start with category number one, Zeisim v'anavim, exactly as we just presented. Zeisim v'anavim, any juice that comes out of them on Shabbos, regardless of why you purchased the Zeisim V'Anavim, is going to be Usr on Shabbos. Good. Then the Braisa goes on to Sim Shemashach Mehem Mayim, V'Rimonim Shemashach Mehem Yayin. If I have the berry where I squeezed it, and the pomegranate which I squeezed it, and I extracted its juice, we made the observation yesterday, but let's quickly go over. By Tusim it says that you are Mashach Mehem Mayim. So the berry that comes out of it, it's called water, but obviously it's the juice of the berry. And Rimonim is called Yayin. And probably it's because the pomegranate is very acidic, and so therefore the liquid that comes out of it has a wine type of texture to it or flavor to it. Either way, v'ichnisem la'achilam hayotzem mehem mutter, la'mashkim ulistam hayotzem mehem aser. Divrei Rebbe Yehuda. So it depends why you purchased it. If you purchased it as an achila, you wanted to eat these fruit, so then anything that comes out of it on Shabbos on its own is going to be mutter. If you purchased it for drink, so anything that comes out of it is going to be aser. And according to the Chachamim, regardless of why you purchase a fruit, anything that comes out of it is going to be aser. And what we have in this price is exactly how we presented it. This price went over category number one and category number two. Good. Now, if I'm going to reread carefully the last point that was made by Rabbi Yehuda, if I purchase them for food, I'm just rereading the line of the price, la'ochlin hayotze mehem mutter. But lamashkim ulistam hayotze mehem aser. However, if we purchase them for drink, or let's say when we purchase these fruits and rimonim stam, there was no thought that went into why I'm purchasing these fruit. Meaning to say that I did not decide at that point in time, at the point of purchase, whether we're going to eat the fruit or whether we're going to juice the fruit. So what category does that fall under? So in the braisa it falls under the category of mashkin. And so therefore, stam and mashkin in the braisa are equivalent. Okay, that is that's the braisa. And again, the whole point of the braisa was just simply to support Rabba's presentation of the machlokas, and the braisa was very clear. In fact, Rashi pointed out, and I made mention this quickly yesterday, Rashi points out the braisa seems to be abundantly clear that this way to present it is correct. It almost sounds like there's no other way to see it. Rashi goes through it. You can take a look at Rashi, who discusses how could you look at the Braisa in any other way other than the way that was presented by Rabba. But okay, we're going to continue, and that is we're going to focus on this idea that when you buy the fruit stam with no designation, so which category does it slide into? It slides into category of mashkin. And the Gemara wants to know if Rav Yehuda stam aser v'atanan. So the Gemara says, let's see if we could support this idea. The Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. The problem is that we have a Mishnah, and the Mishnah over here is Machshirin. As we've gone over numerous times, in order for a food to become susceptible to Tumah, so it must come into contact with one of these seven liquids. seven liquids, Yad Shachat Dam. That's the acronym to help remember what the seven liquids are. So of the seven liquids, we're not going to go through all seven right now, but we're going to go through a number of them. Of the seven liquids, parenthetically, two of them actually are extracted from a fruit, and as you could probably guess, the two of them are going to be Zesim V'anavim, or the actual liquid itself is going to be Yain V'shemen. Of the seven liquids, olive oil and wine are two of the seven liquids, and of the seven liquids, those are the only ones that are extracted from a fruit. And by the way, two of them are biological liquids, blood and milk. Two of them are water. I guess we are going to go through all seven right now. Two of them are water, and that's Mayim and Tal. And the last one is going to be honey, Dvash. So the seven liquids, so the Gemara now is going to be discussing the liquid of Chalav. The liquid of Chalav, the Mishnah goes on. V'atanam, we learned in the Mishnah, Chalav ha'isha matam l'ratzon v'shalo l'ratzon. Chalav behema ina matame ela l'ratzon. So here what we have in the Mishnah is a question of l'ratzon. Again, we're never discussing the topic of machshirin, so this is pretty much the halacha that comes up nearly every single time. And that is the idea that a liquid is only going to be a machshir. Sorry, I think I missed a basic step. Let me just go back. When it comes to machshirin, so we know that a food is not going to be susceptible to tumah until first the food is detached from the ground and the food comes into contact with one of the seven liquids. Coming into contact with one of the seven liquids, it has to be l'ratzon. The pasuk, when describing this process of the food coming into the liquid, so the Torah describes it as ki yutan, when the liquid falls on the fruit. Now, the word yutan is passive, which means to say that as long as any one of the seven liquids just happens to come onto the fruit, so now it's mukshel kabel tumah. Now it is ready; it is susceptible to becoming tameh. On the other hand, the pasuk says it without a vav, so it could be read. It could be read as ki yitain, which means that you have to put the liquid on the fruit. Which one is it? Does the liquid have to fall on the fruit, or do you have to actually put the liquid on the fruit? And the Gemara says, and this comes up again and again throughout Shas, and that is that it has to be that the liquid comes onto the fruit. You don't have to actively do so, but you must desire that the liquid comes onto the fruit. And this is the halacha of l'ratzon, which means to say that there must be consent on your part. It must please you that the liquid came into contact with the fruit. With all that stated now, so here let's learn together the Mishnah in Machshirin. Chalav ha'isha matam l'ratzon shelo l'ratzon. When it comes to the liquid coming out of a woman, the milk that's coming out of a woman, meaning we say milk, we of course normally assume that it's cow's milk, which is true. But it's also the milk that comes out of a woman as well, as a human as well. And so therefore we're learning an interesting halacha, and that is that when it comes to the milk that's expressed by a woman, so the halacha is that it is going to be a machshir, even if it comes shelo l'ratzon, meaning not with the consent of the woman. On the other hand, chalav behema ina matame ela l'ratzon. But when it comes to cow's milk, so then the milk has to be expressed out of the cow, only l'ratzon, only because you want it. So this halacha of l'ratzon, which is typically the bar that's set in terms of when a liquor is a machshir, so here in this Mishnah, we're learning notable exception is the milk that comes out of a woman. In terms of the milk that comes out of a woman, why milk in general is considered a machshir? So Rashi over here quotes the pasuk in Sefer Shoftim. Rashi towards the bottom, the Amud Ben Shiyasa Machmas L'Ratzon Ben Shalal L'Ratzon Shachalav Kari Mashke. When it comes to milk, milk is called a mashke shenemar. Vatiftaches Dorda Chalav Atashkehu. So Ya'el, she opens up the milk Vatashkehu. So you see that the chalav in the Navi is described as a mashke. So this, Rashi says, is a source that teaches us that milk is a mashke. Anyway, so human milk is a notable exception in that it is going to be a machshir, even if it's shelo l'ratzon. So I'm Rabbi Akiva, so we are now going to learn the Mishnah together. And again, even though the Mishnah sounds like we're totally going off base, it's going to bring us back because it's going to discuss tam, seemingly. So I'm Rabbi Akiva Kavachomer, Umma chalav isha she'inu miyuchad ala ketanim betam l'ratzon shelo l'ratzon. Chalav abeim shemiyuchad bein l'ketanim bein l'gedolim einu din shi'itam bein l'ratzon bein shelo l'ratzon. So Rabbi Akiva presents an argument, and the argument is like this. Look, when it comes to the milk that comes out of a mother, out of a human, so who is its consumer base? It's a limited consumer base. It's only the infants that are going to be going ahead and consuming this milk, and you're telling me that that milk is going to be a machshir l'ratzon and shelo l'ratzon? So now when we're talking about the milk that comes from a cow, and the consumer base over there is all people, So you have a much larger population of consumers. So there, kavachomer, how much more so should this milk be a machshir bein l'ratzon bein shelo l'ratzon? That's a kavachomer Rabbi Kiva. So amar lo, im tamei chalav ha'isha shelo l'ratzon, shedama kabasa tamei, yitma chalav ha'behema shelo l'ratzon, shedama magapasa tahor. So the counter-argument, the Chachamim said Rabbi Kiva, is it's not a good kavachomer. You can't compare the milk that comes from a woman and the milk that comes from a cow. Why? Because we know that when it comes to the liquids that come out of a woman, what is the other biological liquid that is a machshir? Blood. So there's a distinction to be made between the blood that comes from a woman and the blood that comes from a cow. Blood that comes from a woman, dama gapasa, we're talking about where there's just a simple cut on her body, and the blood that comes out of that cut, so that blood is in fact going to be a machshir. On the other hand, when it comes to a cow, when it comes to an animal, that's not true. When you have the cow, where blood that comes out of the cow through any kind of cut, any kind of wound, so that blood is not going to be a machshir. Now, it happens to be true, by the way, that when it comes to an animal, you shecht the animal, so there the dam shechita is going to be a machshir. Okay, and Rashi notes that, and we have a special pasuk that explains why that should be. But outside of that, any other blood that comes out of an animal, out of a wound, is not going to be a machshir. So the Chachamim say back to Rabbi Akiva, the kavachomer would have been your kavachomer would have been good if the only biological liquid that is a machshir is going to be milk. But that's not true. The other biological liquid which is going to be a machshir is blood, and we find that the woman, a human, presents an extra chomer by blood that you don't have by animals. So the kavachomer therefore is not working, because the only way the kavachomer works is we're going from cow to chomer. So, but it's not true when it comes to a woman, evident by the fact that when it comes to the halach of blood, the blood magapasa, the wound blood of woman is going to be a machshir. Wound blood of an animal is not going to be a machshir. So amar lehen, so Rabbi Kiva responds, machmani b'chalav mi b'dam sha'chalav l'refua tamei v'amekes l'refua tahor. And Rabbi Kiva says back to the Chachamim, I can make a very simple and basic distinction between the two biological liquids, between milk and blood. I'm going to be machmir when it comes to milk more than blood, because when it comes to milk, let's say the milk is expressed from the woman, or in this case from the animal, lirifua, meaning the only reason why we're expressing this milk is because the animal happens to be bloated, and so therefore you're just simply relieving it of some of its milk. And meanwhile, under those circumstances, that's going to be a machshir. But meanwhile, make is the refua. But let's say we are not, we are removing blood from the animal as a refua, as a form of therapy, that is not going to be a machshir. So you see over there, even in an animal, there is a distinction to be made between milk and blood. And so therefore, even though it's true, your point is correct, that when it comes to areas like dam, so it's true that you have a chumra by humans that you do over animals. But that shouldn't impact my kavachomer, because I'm making kavachomer within milk. And you see clearly, even within the animal itself, there's a distinction to be drawn between milk and blood. And so therefore, I can now go ahead and separate those two in terms of the halacha. And so therefore, my kavachomer by milk stands. And so this is Rabbi Kiva's counter response back to the Chachamim. And finally, Amar lo, the Chachamim say back to Rabbi Akiva, Sali zeizim v'anav yochichu. Let's take a look at the baskets of grapes and olives. Sha'amashkin ayotzim ehem l'ratzim tamayim shalol l'ratzim tahorim. And meanwhile, when I have any kind of liquid coming out of the baskets, if it's l'ratzon, if that liquid is something that I wanted, so then it's a machshir. And if it's shalol l'ratzon, if it's something I didn't want, so then it's not going to be a machshir, it's going to be tahor. Okay. And this is now the back and forth between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim regarding whether or not a kavachomer can be made regarding the milk that comes out of a woman, which is the machshir, bein l'ratzon bein shelo l'ratzon, and whether the same thing to be said regarding cow's milk. Is that also going to be a machshir, bein l'ratzon bein shelo l'ratzon? Rabbi Kiva, through his kavachomer, believes the answer to that is yes. And the Chachamim go back, and the Chachamim say no, the kavachomer doesn't work. And the back and forth, whether or not the kavachomer can be made, whether the kavachomer cannot be made. And finally, in the back and forth, at the end of the back and forth, the Chachamim say back to Rabbi Akiva, look, by a basket of olives and grapes, where there's liquid oozing out, if it's l'ratzon, so then it's a machshir, and if it's shalol l'ratzon, then it's not going to be a machshir. And in the back and forth, what we see over here is that the Chachamim are basically saying to Rabbi Akiva, how can you make a distinction between something you want versus something you don't want? Because if it's something you don't want, that's what's called Shalala Ratzon. And we know the basic halacha regarding Makshirin is Shalala Ratzon is not going to be a Makshir. Anyway, what comes out from all this back and forth into this discussion is at the end of the Braisa, we're talking about Zeisim V'Anavim, and in the end of the Braisa, we are now making a distinction between L'Ratzon and Shalala Ratzon. What is meant at the end of the Braisa? My love L'Ratzon, D'Nichalei Shalala Ratzon B'Stama. So presumably, the distinction is the following. When the Braisa says that the oil from the olives or the wine from the grapes is coming through the holes of the basket, and it said, and it described it as L'Ratzon, what probably it meant under those circumstances is that I wanted that juice. On the other hand, when the Braisa says Shalala Ratzon, so now we're trying to make a contrast. What's the contrast? Well, I know the contrast would be I didn't want it, but if I just move the bar just a little bit, meaning if I'm going from a position where I want it, and now I want to make a distinction, a more subtler distinction, a sharper contrast, to where do we go from where I wanted it, where I'm indifferent, stama. So under those circumstances, presumably that's the distinction that's drawn in the Braisa. And what the Braisa is now telling me is that when it is Zeisim V'Anavim, and the liquid comes out now, it's not the liquid that I want, but just simply, stum, I'm indifferent. I didn't have a interest in wanting it. I didn't have a disinterest in it. Stum, it just simply was something that I did not have any particular mindset. And in the Braisa is describing that as shelo l'ratzon. And now the Gemara is able to formulate its question. Now, typically speaking, olives and grapes are something that you normally squeeze. And shalala ratzon velo klum. And meanwhile, we're saying that if a person is indifferent to it, so then it is considered shalo klum. It's considered as if it's not really a mashke. Tusim v'rimonim de la b'nei schita ninu. Now go down to category number two, the berries and the pomegranates. We're in category number two, so it's not typically used for squeezing. It can go in one of two directions. It could be squeezed. It could be not squeezed. So there, lo kol shekein. So if I'm indifferent. So let's think about this now. In the case of Zeisim V'Anavim, where I was indifferent, and we described that as being something which is not a mashke, so now, Tusim V'Ramonim, which already now is working at a lower position, where you don't even normally buy it for juicing. Sometimes for juicing, sometimes for eating. So there, indifferent should certainly mean that it should not be a mashke. So, if we're right regarding Zeisim V'Anavim, that stam is going to not be a mashke, so then Tusim V'Ramonim certainly shouldn't be a mashke. And all this now brings us around to where we started. Because where we started, Rabbi Huda and the Braisa said that if I purchase a Tusim V'Ramonim for juicing, so then the juice that comes out of it is going to be usher. And if I purchased it stam, that's also going to be like I purchased it for juicing, and therefore it's going to be usher. In the Braisa, we said that even Zeisim V'Anavim that were purchased stam is going to be not considered a mashke. So certainly Tusim V'Ramonim stam are not going to be a mashke. That is the Gemara's question. But all this question, of course, is built on an assumption. And what the Gemara now is going to do is challenge the assumption. And the Gemara says, lo, l'ratzon b'stama, shelo l'ratzon digale adaite. So the Gemara says, we're going to change our definitions of the Braisa. When the Braisa said, Zeisim V'Anavim l'ratzon, l'ratzon over there meant I was indifferent. I didn't have any mindset when with those olives and those grapes. And shelo l'ratzon means that the Amr, he said, lo nichali. I didn't want it, the juice. I specifically wanted the olives and grapes for the consumption, for the eating, but not for the juice. That's where the Braisa is drawing the distinction. And so now everything's fine. Meaning, at this point in time now, we have no indication of what stam would be by Tusim V'Rimonim. Stam by Zeisim V'Anavim for sure going to be considered a mashke. That's where the Mishnah Machshirin ended with the word l'ratzon. And then when it comes to shalala ratzon, it means that I deliberately, intentionally did not want the juice that comes out of it. I wanted the fruit. Okay. That's one way to answer up. The Gemara also happens to give a second way to answer up as well. Ibai Sema Shani Sali Zeisim V'Anavim Kevin Dele Ibad Kaime Mikara Afkure Mafkire Lahu. Or it could very well be that, look, in the end of Machshirin, we're talking about where you put the olives and the grapes in the basket, knowing full well that there are holes at the bottom of the basket, knowing full well that there is going to be juice that's going to come out, and the juice is going to go through the holes, and the juice is going to get lost. So over there, it could very well be that l'ratzon means that I wanted the juice, and shalala l'ratzon means stam. but that doesn't translate over to other areas. Since the fruit was put into the basket, and since I know that there were holes in the basket, the only way that the juice that comes out is going to have significance is only when I had the mindset of that I wanted that juice, because the default is I put it in a basket with holes. I didn't want the juice, and the juice is going to fall to the ground. So over there, the default setting is specific to that particular case, but that is not the default setting under normal circumstances of the juice that comes out of olives and grapes, and certainly not the juice that comes out of tusim v'rimonim. Okay. Ad kan, that takes us to the first half of today's daf. So a question of Rabbi Yehuda in terms of stam, when person goes ahead and purchases tusim v'rimonim without specific designation of whether it should be for juicing or whether it should be for eating. And so in the Braisa, we know Rabbi Yehuda says that stam is going to be like mashka. And what we spent the first half of the daf doing is noting that in the Mishnah Machshirin, you don't get that impression. But the Gemara says the Mishnah Machshirin, either we're going to redefine the terms, or the Mishnah Machshirin is talking about a specific case where I put the olives and the grapes in a basket knowing that the juice is holech le'ibud. We are going to now start the second half of today's daf. We are on the bottom of Kuf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. Ashkechan Rabbi Yehuda demodil Rabbanan b'zeisim v'anavim. Rabbanan demodil Rabbi Yehuda b'shar peres minalan. So again, we are going back now to the fourth way we presented the machlokes between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda. The approach of Rabba in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmol that says in the case of zeisim v'anavim we have agreement. In the case of shar peres we have agreement. And the machlokes is only by tusim v'rimonim. So the Gemara says, look, we have already now seen a source that Rabbi Yehuda is in agreement to the Chachamim by Zeisim V'Anavim. That was a brisa that started off our daf this morning. What about the other way? How do we know that when it comes to Shar Peros, how do we know that the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Yehuda? That by Shar Peros, by category number 3, there, any juice that comes out of it on Shabbos is going to be mutter. Where do we see that? Do we have any evidence for that whatsoever? We didn't have any evidence in the brisa because the brisa that started off our morning only covered category number 1 and category number 2. In the Mishnah, which started off the whole discussion in yesterday's daf, the Mishnah doesn't even mention what fruit we're talking about. The Mishnah, if you look back at the Mishnah, yesterday's daf, Ein Softin Esa Peros. The Mishnah doesn't even tell us which category we're in. Only because we know of the approach of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel, so do we assume that the category that we're describing right now is the category of Tusim V'Rimonim. But it doesn't even say that in the Mishnah. Where do we have evidence that when it comes to Shar Peros, the Chachamim agree to Rav Yehuda? So the Gemara says, D'Tanya, we have a Braisa. Sochtin. And the Braisa over here now is going to be talking about Shar Peros. Sochtin, we are on the top of the Amud Beis. B'pegamu, b'frisimu, v'uzradim, avalo b'rimonim. So one is allowed to squeeze on Shabbos these types of fruits. I'm going to attempt to define. Prunes, quinces, some form of apple. I may be right with my definition. The point, however, is that these are sharp arrows. And so therefore, the Braisa says that on Shabbos, you can go ahead and you can squeeze them. But not Rimonim, but not pomegranates. And then the Braisa ends off with the words, Vishal Beis Menashe Bar Menachem, Hayusoftim B'Rimonim, in the family of Menashe Bar Menachem. So they would go ahead and they would squeeze their pomegranates. Now, I'm going to come back to that line a little bit later. The Gemara is going to spend a good amount of time with that line a little bit later. But in the meantime, however, let's focus on the first part of the Braisa, where the Braisa says that if it's sharp peros, any other fruit, one is allowed to squeeze it. Now, let's remember, our entire discussion between yesterday and today was, I have these fruits on Shabbos, and the juice oozes out on its own. So by Zeisim V'Anavim, it's Osir. By Tusim V'Rimonim, it's a Machlokas. By sharp peros, it is Mutter. Now, if you think about it, wait one second. This Braisa, look carefully at the first words of the Braisa on the bottom of the Amud Aleph, and that is, Sochtin bipigayim uva frisin uva ozradim. The Braisa says actually you can squeeze. Now that's amazing. Meaning our whole discussion was only the juice that comes out on its own. Over here the Braisa says you're allowed to squeeze them presumably on Shabbos. So that's rather amazing because that's one step further than what we assumed we were discussing. Okay, so that's an important point. And hold that thought for just a moment. In the whole reason why the Gemara brought this Braisa is to show us that the Chachamim agree to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, in the Braisa that we just quoted, does it say that we're talking about the Shita of the Chachamim? Does it say we're talking about the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda? It's just simply presented as a Tanakama. And the Gemara now wants to know, Umi Mai de Rabbanani, Dema Rabbi Yehuda. How do you know who the author of the Braisa is? Could the author of the Braisa not simply be the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda? The purpose of bringing this Braisa is to show us that the Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Yehuda. And now the Gemara says, wait one second. There is no identification of who the author is in this Braisa. So how do I know in this Braisa that the author of the Braisa is in fact going to be the Shita of the Chachamim? So the Gemara, that's a really good question. The Gemara says, V'tahavi nami Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says, okay, so you know what? Let's even concede. I'll give it to you that the author of the Braisa is Rav Yehuda. But still, the point is being made. How is the point being made? Well, let's think about this. Even within the Shita of Rav Yehuda, what did we think the allowance was according to Rav Yehuda? Only for the juice that comes out on its own. We didn't think that the allowance of Rav Yehuda is that you can actually squeeze fruit in category number 3, in this category of Shar Peros. So what? And meanwhile, the Braisa says, Sochsin, you're allowed to squeeze it. Elamai Isach Lememar. So what we're going to have to do is now we're going to have to basically come on to a discovery. What's the discovery? Kevin Delav Bnei Tzchita Ninhu, Afilu Lechatchila, Afilu Tema Rabbanan. So look, what the Braisa is teaching us is that when it comes to Shar Peros, they are typically not juiced. Zeisim V'Navim are juiced all the time. Tusim V'Rimonim Yesh V'Yesh. This third category over here, they're simply not juiced. And since they're not juiced, so then that means to say that squeezing them does not violate a malacha to begin with. It's an unbelievable discovery, tremendous chiddush, is that in this category number 3, because the nature of these fruit is typically that they're eaten, so therefore extracting the juice out of them does not violate the malacha of dash. It's not tzchita. It's not a subcategory of dash. Dash is only when we typically are extracting the contents of this food. Over here, since the Shar Peros, the category number 3, are typically never juiced, so removing the juice out of them is not going to be the type of extraction that mimics the Malacha D'Araisa of Dash. So that's tremendous. And the Gemara says, now that we've reached this point of discovery, now Afilu Tema Rabbanan. So now we understand why it is that we're forced into this position to say that the Chachamim are agreeing to Rabbi Yehuda. So now we know that when it comes to Shar Peros, it doesn't operate with the same principles as Zeisim V'Anavim nor Tusim V'Rimonim. Zeisim V'Anavim and Tusim V'Rimonim, which are candidates for the Malach of Schita, so there we have a discussion and a debate what happens when the juice comes out on its own. But over here in category number 3, it's not even a candidate for Schita. That's why there, by definition, has to be agreement between the Chacham and Rav Yehuda. Because we're no longer operating with the Svara of, it's a candidate for Schita, the juice comes down on its own, maybe we're going to end up squeezing it. No. The Pshat with category number 3, Shar Peros, is it's simply not a candidate for the Malacha of Schita. And so therefore, by definition, the Chacham and Rav Yehuda are now going to agree, not only is the juice that comes out of it going to be Mutter, you can even squeeze it on Shabbos, because it's not even subject to the Malacha. Okay. That brings us now to the end of the section of the Gemara. Comes out now is that we do in fact have a support that teaches us that the Chachamim agree to Rav Yehuda in category number 3. And oh, by the way, not only that, but we really hit a major chiddush, which is that in category number 3, it's not even subject to the Malach of Schita, and thereby which you can even squeeze it on Shabbos. Okay. Now in the Braisa that we quoted at the top of the Amud, so then we noted the family of Menashe Bar Menachem. The family of Menashe Bar Menachem go ahead and they squeeze pomegranates. Now there's an important Rashi, and let's go back to the Rashi here. And Rashi says, Vishel Beis Menashe. Rashi writes, Rashi is 3 lines down, Hayu Regilim Eskot Rimonim Bechol. What the Bryce is describing over here is the following. Is that the family of Beis Menashe, when it comes to pomegranates, so they would typically squeeze it. Meaning, this is not the Bryce over here is not describing their activity on Shabbos. What is describing is what they typically do during the week. And what is and so what? Rashi writes, Alma, Ika Desachi Lahu, Hilkach B'Shabbos Hasser. So that means to say that because this particular family on a regular basis makes pomegranate juice, so that means to say now that the pomegranate is typically used for juicing, and so therefore the liquid that comes out of it is going to be Usr. That's the point that's being made based on the family of Bar Menashe, the base Menashe Bar Menachem. And perhaps everyone here is wondering, That's the behavior of one family. And now that's going to tell us what is going to be done with, typically with pomegranates, and therefore it's going to impact the halacha regarding Shabbos, and that's going to be the Gemara's next discussion. Shabbos Menashe, Bar Menachem, Hayisof, Timurimonim. So during the week they would typically make pomegranate juice, which now tells us that the pomegranate is used for juicing. So I'm Rav Nachman, halacha kishabbos Menashe, Bar Menachem. So Rav Nachman says that's in fact the halacha. Now the way he says it, what it sounds like he's saying is that we're going to be postulating like the opinion of Menashe Bar Menachem. But the Gemara immediately reacts to that. I'm Alei Rav, Rav Nachman, Menashe Bar Menachem, Tanahu. No, he's not expressing an opinion. We're looking at this particular family in order to indicate a particular behavior. He's not paskening the halacha. You shouldn't be paskening like Menashe Bar Menachem. He's not a Tana expressing an opinion. So maybe, okay, so the Gemara says, okay, what Rav Nachman meant is that whoever is the Tana that is pointing us to the family of Bar Menashe Bar Menachem, and we're passing like that Tana, to which now the Gemara says, okay, Mishum de Savra ke Menashe Bar Menachem, Halacha Kamoso, Menashe Bar Menachem have Ruba da Alma. So the Gemara says, okay, so you're pointing to one family that happens to love pomegranate juice. And every time they get pomegranates, they always juice it. Okay, that's one family. The Gemara says, I don't understand. That shouldn't dictate what the halacha is. The halacha should not be mandated or dictated based on the behavior of one particular family. The Gemara says, I don't understand what's going on over here. When it comes to this category number two of Tusim Virimonim, so you're telling me that this family always makes pomegranate juice, therefore all pomegranates are therefore going to be juiced? What do you mean all pomegranates? It's one family. Now, the Gemara says in. Well, the Gemara says, well, we can look at the behavior of a particular population. The Gemara says, did none. We have the following Mishnah. And now this Mishnah is going to take us into the halachas of Kalayim, which obviously is totally unrelated to our discussion, but you're going to see in just a moment, based on a particular point that we're going to make, that it is related to our discussion. Hamekayim kotzim bekerem, let's say a person allows thorns and thistles to grow in their vineyard. Now, thorns and thistles do not sound like anything that is consumed. We already discussed Kalayim just recently in the Daf. Comes up again and again throughout Shas. Obviously, we don't do Masechta Kalayim. It's a Masecha in Seder Zrayim. But still, numerous Mishnayos and Kalayim are quoted. And over here, this Mishnah is talking about thorns and thistles being planted in a vineyard. And according to the Tanakhama, it is going to be... I'm sorry. So, HaMekayim Kotzim Bekerem, Rebbe Lazar Omer Kidesh, V'chacham Amomim Eino Mekadesh Eladavar Shekamal Mekayimim. And so we have a machlokas over here between Rebbe Lazar and the Chachamim, whether or not one violates Kalayim. Now, according to the sheet of Rebbe Lazar, one is going to be violating Kalayim. The word Kidesh simply means that you have now sanctified the field. The field now has to be destroyed because one has violated the Isser of Kalayim. Now, the sheet of Rebbe Lazar is premised on the idea thorns and thistles are, in fact, consumed. It's consumed typically by animals. But anyway, it is a violation of Kalayim. And the Chachamim say, of course it's not a violation of Kalayim. Normally, when you have thorns and thistles growing in your field, so you want to get rid of it. You're not going to promote its growth. And so, therefore, the only time that one is violating Kalayim is only when the other produce that's growing in the vineyard is going to be something that you want. It's going to be mekayim it. V'am Rabbi Chanina, my time of the Rebbe Lazar. Now, in order to wrap our head around the idea of Rebbe Lazar that one is violating this with Kalayim, so how do we get there? Shekein bar Rabbi, mekayim in kotzi, sadus l'gamalehem. Because if you go to the Arabian country, you're going to find over there that they go ahead and they grow these thorns and these thistles in the field in order to feed their camels. So it is a behavior that is that is performed by a group of people. And so what the Gemara says is, you see, when you have a particular group of people behaving in a certain way, so that can actually influence and inform the halacha. So the Gemara says, okay, I'm ready to accept that point. Mi de'irya. But wait one second. The Arabia, Asra. You're talking about a nation, the Arabian nation. But Hacha, Baladaita, Itzukal Adam. But over here, you're pointing to one family. And you're telling me that one family should in fact influence and inform the Halacha? I can't compare a country to one particular family. So the Gemara says, okay. So, what we need to now do is we need to go back to the Braisa, and we need to rethink how to understand the Braisa. How to make sense of the Braisa. So again, on the top of the Amud, We quoted a brisa regarding sharperos. The fruits of prunes, quinces, and apples, so is one allowed to squeeze them on Shabbos? According to the Tanakhama, one is allowed to squeeze them on Shabbos. Again, this is category number three. This is sharperos, and so therefore you can squeeze them. And then the brisa quoted the position of Menashe bar Menachem, or the family of Menashe bar Menachem. Well, what they would do is that they would go ahead and they would squeeze pomegranates. And so what we try to do is we try to understand what exactly is this issue when it comes to the pomegranates. Meaning, according to the Tanakhama, you're not allowed to squeeze pomegranates, but when the juice comes out of the pomegranates, it's going to be mutter. And according to the second opinion, so it's going to be aser when the juice comes out of the pomegranates. And right now, the way we thought the pshat was, is that the reason behind the second position of the brisa is because of the behavior of this particular family. But the Gemara now acknowledges, okay, one family is squeezing their pomegranates, making pomegranate juice, that's not going to affect the halacha. So there has to be another way to understand the brisa, and what the Gemara now is going to do is give a couple of other approaches of how to understand the brisa, but the Gemara acknowledges, just because one family behaved in a certain way, bait la daita itza kol adam, that's not going to be reflective of what is normative behavior. So, elahein taima. So the Gemara says, okay, so now going back to the brisa, so we're going to have to give a pshat. And again, we're saying pshat both in the brisa, and also we're understanding Rav Nachman, because Rav Nachman's ruling is that we're going to be following the second opinion, which is that on Shabbos, one is not allowed to squeeze and make pomegranate juice, because it's typically done during the week. But what's the reason behind that? Elahein time of the kid Rav Chista, Dam Rav Chista. So we're going to start off with the halacha of Rav Chista. Rav Chista says that if I have beets and I squeeze the beets and I take the beet juice and I put it into the mikvah, it's going to post on the mikvah, it'll disqualify the mikvah, bishinu emara, with a discoloration of the mikvah. In order to understand what's going on over here, so first of all, a couple of quick halachas regarding a mikvah. A mikvah needs to have 40 sa of mayim, it has to have 40 sa of water, mayim shu'uvim, naturally collected rainwater, and if I have another water that goes into it, so under certain circumstances, it'll post to the mikvah. Now, generally speaking, when we discuss this, we're talking about mayim shu'uvim. That's not the halacha that's being discussed over here. Mayim shu'uvim, when I have water that went into a kli, and then subsequently put into a mikvah, gimel lugim of mayim shu'uvim is going to be posted as a mikvah when the mikvah was not yet at the point of 40 sa. Good, that's a halacha, but that's not what we're describing right now. And Rashi makes that very clear, that's not what we're describing right now. What we're describing right now is the halacha of putting in some sort of liquid which is going to discolor the mikvah. And there's no halacha of gimel logan. If, in fact, the liquid that's put into the mikvah is going to change its color and it's shar mashkin, and this liquid is being extracted from a juice, so then it will, in fact, disqualify the mikvah through its discoloration. And now, what is gained from all this? Why is this relevant to our discussion? Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi de Ramaskel for Rav Chizka. Rashi writes, Afagav de ba'ama lo chashiv. Look, in terms of trajan, they're beets. Beets fall under category number three. We typically say that when you're juicing a beet, that juice that comes out of it is not significant. That's true. But kaven de achshev ihu havili didei mashke. But however, if you're going through the trouble of squeezing it, it now shows that even though typically it is not considered significant, but by you actively squeezing it, you are now giving it significance. This is the principle of achshevei. And we're now taking this idea, which is introduced to us by Rav Chista in the halachas of mikvahs, and now we're going to carry it over into Shabbos. And again, let's take a look at Rashi. Let's continue in Rashi. V'hachi mefarsh Rav Nachman lebraisa. This is Rav Nachman's understanding of the braisa. Delel soktim bebegayim bebefrishon lamate kapri v'lo lesor chamashke. Look, when it comes to these fruits, prunes, quinces, and apples, the only reason why anyone is extracting any of the juices from this from it is not because of the juice, but rather, basically, to sweeten the fruit. Look, these are fruits which are, generally speaking, very tart. Which makes me wonder if my definition of prunes is good, but it doesn't matter. These particular fruit are very tart. And basically the only way to get them into a point of being edible, sweetening them, is bruising them a little bit, extracting some of the liquid. But there, the extraction of the liquid over there is only to improve the fruit. L'mate kesapri. Avalo berimonim. The apil l'matkam. However, Rav Nachman says this is true by sharp pears, but it's not true by pomegranates. Pomegranates, so the reason why a person's extracting the liquid is because he wants the liquid. Well, and how do I know that? Dishal beis menashe, ayusoftim b'chol, etzorech mashke. Because beis menashe would actually make pomegranate juice. Meaning that you see when it comes to pomegranates, the reason for the extraction of the liquid, unlike the other fruit, where there the extraction is just simply to sweeten the fruit, but when it comes to the pomegranates, you actually want the fruit itself. Hilkach, Rashi writes, B'Shabbos Aser Afilu L'Matek Ho V'Ikachad Da'avid L'Shem Mashke V'Lo Mishum D'Menashe Ruba Da'ama Ela Chayshin and Isharis Le L'Matek Aser L'Mavid L'Shem Mashke. So Rashi says, it's not we're using Menashe's behavior in order to inform what the halakha is. What the family of Menashe is teaching us is that when it comes to pomegranate, sometimes people are extracting the juice because they actually want the juice. So that means to say that when it comes to these tart fruit, you're extracting the juice only for one reason only, to sweeten the fruit. And so therefore the liquid that comes out does not have the category of mashke, and therefore, again, like we already pointed out, these are not candidates for schita. But when it comes to rimonim, since yesh v'yesh, sometimes the juice is extracted to sweeten the pomegranate. But sometimes the juice is extracted because you actually want the juice. And since that's true, so now, Rav Nachman says, we're always going to be concerned that the person who is deliberately extracting juice out of the pomegranate is doing so for the purposes of the juice, and therefore, it's going to have the status of mashke, and therefore, one's going to be violating the isser of schita. I'm finishing up the Rashi, and since the person now is lending significance to the juicing, have a mashke, now the extraction is what in halacha is described as a mashke, but when it comes to these other fruits, Rashi concludes, so nobody behaves in this manner. It's always, the liquid is always extracted in order to sweeten the fruit, and so therefore the liquid extraction never has the status of being called a mashke. Good. And all this is borrowed from the halacha regarding mikvos, because in mikvos, if one takes the beet juice, extracts it from the beet, he is machshivit, and therefore that which comes out is called a mashke. And therefore, discoloring the mikvah is in fact going to be post of the mikvah. Okay, and now we're going back to the Gemara. We're on the first wide line at the end of the first wide line. V'ha'la b'nei schita ninu. And the Gemara now is just going to recap what we all saw together in Rashi. And the Gemara says now, beets are not something that you normally squeeze. Ela ma'isach lememar kemed achshavinu havalei mashke. Because you're going out of your way to squeeze it, you're now giving significance to the liquid extract, and now it has the status of being a mashke. Hachinami, kemedach shavinu, havelu mashke. The same thing is true over here. Okay, so this is now all one way to understand the brisa. Rav Nachman's understanding of the brisa is that when it's something that you are actually squeezing, we have a principle of achshave. You are now giving significance, status to the liquid that comes out of it. It now has the status of being a mashke, and therefore for Shabbos, one would be in violation of schita. That is one way to approach it. Rav Papa Amar Mishum. Rav Papa wants to go to the halachas regarding mikvos. Rav Papa actually has a different understanding of why it is that the beet juice is going to posel the mikvah. Not like what Rav Chista said. Rav Chista said it has to do with the principle of achshavei. Rav Papa says, no, it doesn't. Rav Papa Amar Mishum Dehavi Davar She'ein Osim Mimenu Mikvah Lechatchila. You cannot make a mikvah out of beet juice. V'chol Davar She'ein Osim Mimenu Mikvah Lechatchila. Posel es a mikvah b'shinui mara. Rav Papa says, it's not because it's a question of whether it has the status of being a mashke or not a mashke. That's not the reason why the beet juice is posel of the mikvah. Rav Papa says, I'm ready to entertain the idea that the beet juice never has the status of being a mashke. But the reason why it's posel of the mikvah, b'mareh, is because since you cannot use the beet juice extract to make a mikvah, therefore it's going to break a mikvah. It'll pass the mikvah because to begin with, it is not the kind of liquid that could be used to make a kosher mikvah. Tanan Hasam, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah. As long as we're here in this discussion regarding mikvahs, why the beet juice is going to be posel as a mikvah? Is it because of the principle of achshavei? Is it because of the principle of rapapa? So the Gemara now is going to just stay on mikvahs for just a little bit longer. We learned in a Mishnah, Tanan Hasam, Nafla Socha Yaino Chametz, Umochel, Vishino Emare Posa. If you have either wine or vinegar or the olive extract, mochel over here is talking about the first secretions that come out of an olive and it discolors the mikvah, it'll passel the mikvah. Man tana de mochel mashkehu. Now, we're talking about the first secretions that come out of an olive and it's being described over here as a mashke. So Amar Rabbi, Rabbi Yaakov, he did tanya. So it is the shita of Rabbi Yaakov. The Gemara here quotes the following. Tosefta. And that is Rabbi Yaakov Omer. Machal mochel harehu kamashka. When we're talking about the secretion of the olives. Now, more information about secretions. The first secretions of an olive. Now, I'm describing them as secretions. Because, as we're going to see, the only time that it's called olive oil is only well into its pressing. Meaning that the first thing that happens is that the olives are collected. And you have liquid that comes out of it. It is not described as shemen. It's described as mochel. It is the first secretions that come out. Now, if I can even give you more information regarding these first secretions, it actually is being, Rashi describes it as three different stages. When initially put into the basket. So that very first secretion that comes out. So we're going to call that secretion number one. Okay, very fancy terminology. Then, after a couple of days, where it is it's basically piled on one another, and there's pressure. So now, this is going to be stage number two. And then, Rashi goes on to describe, that after now they have been basically ripened, developed, and also somewhat heated up, so then you're going to put it into the vat, and right before you put the press on it, it's going to secrete one more time, and that's going to be stage number three. Okay. That's a lot of information, but in the meantime, however, let's go back to the Braisa, and you'll see why it's important to know all this in the Braisa. Rav Yaakov Omer Mochel Hari Kamashke Omatam Amr Mochel Ayotze B'tchila Tahor. Now that first secretion that comes out is going to be Tahor, Lefisha Einarotze B'kiyumo, because that's secretion that you simply do not want. And Rabbi Shimon Omer Mochel Eino Mashke. And Rabbi Shimon says that Mochel is not considered Mashke. Omatam Amr Mochel Ayotze Mi'ikul Be'sabat Tameh. And why is it that third secretion that comes out is in fact going to be considered shemen and is going to be a makshir, because that's right before the press and right before we're going to be extracting the oil. So in that third mochel stage, so what's going to come out is mostly going to be a liquid secretion, but there is going to be some oil in there. It's impossible that there won't be just a little bit of oil in there. So in the first secretion stage one, so everyone is in agreement that that's mochel, that is not a machshir, because the machshir is only the shemen. And in number three, in stage number three, everyone agrees that it is going to be a machshir. And my beinayu, so now we know, we just learned the brisa, that there is a machlokes between Rav Yaakov and Rabbi Shimon. Where is the machlokes going to be? You probably guessed it already. Ikibinayu da'asi basar itzisisa. Rashi describes it as stage number two. In stage number two, that's the machlokes between Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Shimon. Now, this now brings us to the idea that when we saw the Mishnah in Mikvos, the Mishnah in Mikvos says that Mochel is posel as a mikvah. So what's posel as a mikvah? It has to be a mashke. And since it has to be a mashke, so at what stage is it going to be a mashke? So at stage three, everyone agrees it's a mashke. At stage one, everyone agrees it's not a mashke. So what about stage number two? That's the machlokes between Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Shimon. And that's what Abai is saying, is that the Mishnah in Mikvos that we learned is going like the Shita of Rabbi Yaakov. Fine. And Rava Amar Mishom, the Havidah B'Shedah, was saying, Men a mikvah, postos a mikvah, b'shino emara. And Rava says, you don't have to say that. You could say it actually much simpler. Again, it goes back to what we saw earlier, the idea that something which is a postos a mikvah b'mara, it doesn't have to have the status of being a mashke. It could just simply be predicated on the fact that it's something which it itself cannot be used to make a mikvah, since it itself cannot be used to make a mikvah, therefore it'll postal the mikvah, therefore it'll disqualify the mikvah bemara in its appearance. Admittedly, that is some tangent that comes off of the Gemara over here, but again, the only reason why we discussed it is because we used this idea of mashke in order to explain the braisa on the top of the Amud. Okay, and now would be a wonderful opportunity to recap our daf. We started off this morning by going over the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim regarding Category number two of Tusim Virimonim, Machlokis, whether or not the liquid that comes out of it on Shabbos is going to be Usser or Mutter. According to the Tanakam, it's going to be Usser. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, a distinction to be made. If you purchase the Tusim Virimonim for eating, the juice that comes out is going to be Mutter. If you purchased it for liquids, the juice that comes out of it is going to be Usser. And the Tanakhama says, no, under all circumstances, the liquid comes out of it is going to be Usser. And what we first went over today is the following. Number one, when I purchased Tusim V'Rimonim, without a clear designation of whether I wanted to eat or drink it, stam, where is it going to fall under? What category is it going to fall under? The Braisa says it's going to fall under the category of Mashkin. And what we did this morning is, number one, we wanted to see whether or not we can actually support this idea based on a Mishnah in Machshirin. And the Gemara, the Mishnah Machshirin did not seem to support this idea, but the Gemara ended up saying, yeah, but the Mishnah Machshirin, we could either reinterpret it, or we could say that that's specific to the case of Machshirin. The olives and grapes over there were thrown into a basket. It's Holech Le'ibud. The Mishnah over there may not translate to our discussion. That was number one. Our second discussion today was, in category number one, says Rabbi Yehuda Mashmuel, agreement. In category number three, Sharperos, we have agreement. We know Zaysim Va'anavim that Rabbi Yehuda agreed to the Chachamim. We learned that in the Braisa. How do we know that by Sharperos that the Chachamim agreed to Rabbi Yehuda? How do we know that? And that was the second half of today's daf. And that is that we quoted a Braisa regarding the squeezing of the Sharperos, prunes, quinces, apples, where the Braisa said you're allowed to squeeze them on Shabbos. And the Gemara argued that it's going both according to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda and according to the Shita of the Chachamim. We made a major breakthrough today in terms of understanding that in this third category over here, not only are you allowed to enjoy the juice that comes out of these fruit, you're even allowed to squeeze them on Shabbos. They fall under the category of Sharperos, and the reason why is because typically we don't juice them at all, so therefore they're not even a candidate for the Malach of Shita, and therefore you're actually allowed to squeeze them. What about Rimonim? So in the Braisa, the Braisa said that the family of Menashe Bar Menachem actually squeezed their pomegranates during the week. So that means to tell us that for them, squeezing pomegranates was a normal activity, and therefore the extract that comes out of it is considered falls under the category of Mashka. And Rav Nachman says, and that's the halacha. And the Gemara spent a good amount of time talking today in terms of how can the actions of one family influence what the halacha is going to be. Don't we normally say that if one person is behaving in a certain way, that doesn't define the behavior, and bait ladaita it's a kol adam, and so therefore their behavior could just simply be relegated as being an outlier and doesn't meet the criteria of what's considered normal. And so what the Gemara spent the second half of today's daf doing is explaining that Rav Nachman says that the halacha follows like this position of Menashe bar Menachem, but for different reasons. And what we gave it two other possible reasons why Rav Nachman says that when one squeezes a pomegranate, the juice that comes out is going to be usser, either based on the principle of achshavei, meaning to say that when you're squeezing it, you are clearly demonstrating that you want the juice to come out of it, and therefore the juice is going to have status. And we saw this idea presented in Mikvos, and we borrowed that idea and we use it now to explain Rav Nachman paskening that when you squeeze Rimonim, because Rimonim are in fact squeezed for juicing, at times, so therefore it now has the status of being a mashke when it actually comes out. That's one way to explain it. Or the other way to explain Rav Nachman. That was the way to explain Rav Nachman. And then once we were there by the discussion of Mikvaos, so then we went ahead and we explained the Mishnah regarding the extraction of beet juice, where if you take beet juice and you put him into a mikvah, it's going to pass through the mikvah with Shinu Imara. Why should that be? Either it's going to be principled on the idea of Akshavei, or it's going to be principled on Rapapa, which says that since beet juice is not a liquid that can be used for a mikvah, so therefore it'll pass through the mikvah when it discovers the mikvah. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the daf. Tomorrow we start with the halachas of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel in terms of squeezing the juice of a liquid directly onto a food. Major halacha, which we're going to be beginning tomorrow morning.